When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everyone. It is the final Word Show Liverpool. They beat Newcastle United, Chris.
Yes, they did.
They did. Very, 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 very good game indeed. We'll kick things off right at the top. Squad rotation. We talked a little bit in the build this morning whether we were going to enter this period where Liverpool did actually start to give some other players a chance, and lo and behold, they did. And lo and behold, once again, Jadon Sancho missed out. I had myself convinced that he was getting this game. I couldn't see any other. The stars had aligned. He's not going away on international duty. Bobby Firmino was likely to be jet lagged to fuck, having been on the West Coast and all that kind of stuff. And no, we just went with what we normally do in those situations and started Origi. Poor old Shaq.
No, not really. I mean, let's be honest, Origi's done more over the last 6 months than Shaqiri has. So I wasn't gutted that Shaqiri didn't get a start and stuff. I was happy that Origi got a start, and I was happy that Mane started in that number nine position. But after sort of the first 10-15 minutes, you kind of realised that it wasn't working, didn't you? Liverpool came out and looked a little bit slow and sluggish, but then we did what we've always been able to do when we go a goal behind. Just like, it's like poking the bear, innit? You just make us angry. And then there was points during that game where it was the best performance I've seen in years.
It was a tricky one, wasn't it? I think a combination of factors. You know, obviously we did make a couple of changes. Oxlade-Chamberlain, we'll talk about a little bit later on. Origi then picking up a knock as well, I think, as an impact. But it was mad watching a game of football. And I mean, look, it's the beauty of football. How the contrast that with the Arsenal game at us against them at Anfield, where they basically let Trent and Robbo have the ball,
do whatever
they wanted with it. And then you look at that game, and for the first 20 minutes, Trent's picking the ball up, and there's like two men between him and where he was standing in the Arsenal game. Steve Bruce came out, he looked to pack it, looked to do what they did against Tottenham Hotspur, and it took us a little while, I think, once again, to just feel our way into the game, to figure it out. But unfortunately, obviously, we go a goal down.
Yeah, I think from their perspective, that was the game plan. But they probably scored a bit too early for their own liking, to be honest, because, you know, if they get that goal on an hour and it's 0-0 at that point, you know, they're carrying out a perfect execution of the game plan.
It probably kicks us up the arse to be a bit braver, really, doesn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at that point, we discussed it outside the ground. It seemed as if when we did it on the instant match with where I did that with Steve, everybody woke up, the crowd woke up. There was Andy Robertson tackle after about 20 minutes,
that
just seemed to get the game going from our perspective. I think in general, you know, as you say, I think the factors of a couple of changes, international duty, 12:30 kickoff is never great. And they come out and they're obviously packing, sitting tight, camping in their half. They get the goal and then we kick on from there, really.
Yeah, it was a very odd start to the game, really, wasn't it, Jack? Because they were sat so deep, they got so many men behind the ball, and yet they're obviously still able to cause us problems on the counter as well. So it wasn't like it was a really weird balance to it.
Yeah, I think we were all over the place a bit in the first 20 minutes or so. Obviously, they had a lot. Bruce employed a lot of different tactical things. He tried to outmaster us, but as you say, they were there, they were camped in their own half, they had the setup, and I think it was difficult for us to do anything in that first 20 minutes. And obviously, the goal did seem to give us a kick up the arse to progress from there.
It was It's an absolute belter of a goal, to be fair.
Yeah.
There's. Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was talking to Johnny from Newcastle Fans TV in the week, and he was saying their wing-backs, their full-backs are shite. So when it's Williams on the edge of the area, I'm like, how do you shite him? Ten's got the... fuck. Mm. That was an impressive strike, wasn't it? And I think Trent's position is quite good. I don't think Trent thinks he's going to flick this off the inside of his left foot to go round him and then thunder cunt it into the top bin. Like,
yeah, it's funny because when you watch it in normal time, you're like, wow, what an incredible piece of skill. When you watch it back in slow motion,
he looks like a defender.
He looks like a defender. Yeah, absolutely. In terms of it. What?
It's why your world's patented slower step over works. It
people
shouldn't.
People reached over in laughter.
Yeah.
That they go, yeah, exactly. You've got to. Yeah. I agree. That was exactly what I was thinking watching it back. I was like, sometimes you just throw a skill move. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing a skill move for? Oh, shit. Oh, all right. Yeah, fair play. You'd only get away with it once. Any blame anywhere else? Maybe Virgil?
I mean, look. I think the run by Atsu is really good. I think he takes advantage of Virgil's position. I think Virgil is probably slightly deep, maybe 4 or 5 yards deeper than you'd expect. I was more concerned by the fact that there was probably our 4 defenders all over to Andy Robertson's side of the pitch, and when Atsu did pick the ball up, there was too much space for Williams to come into. And I think that's something that Liverpool struggled with throughout the game. I think, is it Kraft? Is that how you say the right back?
Yeah.
He had an opportunity later on. Whatever. I genuinely don't care. I might learn his name for the next time we play him if he's still in the side.
You literally just asked.
Yeah. I don't care though. I was just being polite, really. But I think we struggled with that all game. Mm. I think their fullbacks, their wing backs, getting high up the pitch, and you know we play a tight midfield three, and then whose job is it? Is it one of the midfielders to track him, or is it one of the forwards to track him? And I don't think any of them really did that, which left the two fullbacks in situations.
Do we think Oxlade-Chamberlain being on the pitch hampered that a little bit for us? Because obviously Jordan Henderson on that side does so much work normally to cover and help out the fullbacks.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
probably. I didn't think he had a very good game, to be honest with you, Ox. I thought he looked like a guy who hasn't had a start at Anfield since April.
Yeah.
His first touch quite often was poor, you know, 5 yard pass to the opposition. In fact, it is poor first touch, which leads to one of Mane's goals, isn't it? Mm. Because then Bobby comes back, wins the ball and plays through Mane in the Dubravka era. But without that poor first touch, we actually probably don't score the goal.
He had a very up and down game. I thought there's moments in that, Ben, where you can see exactly, you know, the Oxlade-Chamberlain that we remember. But there's other moments, and I think he's still getting over that psychological. He needs to just get crunched by someone, I think, and get up and be fine. Because there's a moment, and I think it's actually that one where it's a heavy touch, and he then, look, in the ground, you're saying, shit out. In reality, you know, you're trying not to go out of control, because you could quite easily dive in, give away a free kick, get booked, get a red in those. But it looked to me like a guy who didn't trust himself to go full contact.
Yeah, it's like if when you're a kid and you fell off your bike and it takes you a little while to actually get up to full speed again. Yeah. It is like that. There was one in particular, well, two in the second half in particular, one where he got himself into a really good position. There was a really heavy touch that gave it to Shelvey, and we were basically looking to break away. And then there was another one where he had loads of space to drive into, and he did, and he was driving. It looked as if he was going to, and then he played just a horrendous pass straight to their centre back. And it's a bit like, for me, there was enough there. There were flashes, you know, and that's why I'm not too concerned about it.
There's no point in there's not criticism, because ultimately this is what we're looking at is the road to recovery for Oxlade-Chamberlain at the moment. Jack, he's a player that, as mentioned, you know, April, you know, you're saying, and he's only been getting brief minutes coming on as a substitute, getting that start, getting the chance, getting the minutes in the legs. We're probably not going to see the importance of him just having played that game until like next week or the week after, when he's far more ready.
It's the problem as well. He's not going to get sufficient game time in a short space of time. He's not going to start like 3 games in a row, so it's going to be hard for him. Because it's
true, but look at Adam Lallana last season.
True,
comes on in the derby and everyone goes, what the hell is Adam Lallana coming on in the derby for? Why are we bringing him on? And then he plays the Bournemouth game, I think, the next time out, and he's brilliant because he's had those.
He's part of his
preparation.
I think that's what Oxlade-Chamberlain's needing. I think he does need that consistent game time. I think then he'll get back up to speed. Like he joked in pre-season about his fatiguing and stuff, and I think that is an issue for him right now. I don't think he is himself fully fit, and the Oxlade-Chamberlain that we knew when he first moved to the club. But I do think that when he has had time, he will get back to full speed. But it's one of them injuries, isn't it, where you never know if a player's going to be the same again after it. And I think we're just going to have to be very patient with Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah.
The good thing about Ox is that, you know, that one where he touches it, he drives on and he shoots and it goes just wide. Mm. He's absolutely hammered that ball.
Yeah.
And you know, had he any concerns about, you know, leftovers from that injury, he probably doesn't hit it as hard as he does. He hits that just as hard as he's hit anything in the past. So that gives me a little bit of comfort. There was another one second half where I think it's hard to narrow it down. Firmino flicked the ball into Mo Salah.
That one of ten times.
But Ox plays an incredible ball into Mo Salah's feet that Henderson doesn't play. Mm-hmm. And he's right on the touchline where you take a throw in and stuff. And he drills the ball into the forward. And I thought to myself, that's a really brave pass that nobody on our team probably plays. Yeah. So you can still see that he's got the vision. He's still got the skill to be able to enact what he's thinking and what he's seeing. He just needs more of it. And he talked himself last week, didn't he, about, you know, you mentioned three games on the bounce. He said, I need that. I need to feel like I can do that because that's the next thing for me. Yeah. And he'll be ticking boxes as he goes.
Yeah, when fully fit, is that the best type of game for him, do you think? The teams that sit deep, or do you think he's better off against teams who might play a little bit more open?
He's like, you know, he reminds you of the Trent Alexander-Arnold debate. Mm. Is that, are you better off, do you need more attacking players when you're playing against defensive sides, or do you need these more talented players when you're playing against the best sides because there's more moments of quality start to shine? I looked at this game and said, well, look, he was so good against Newcastle like two seasons ago. He was integral to having that, it's basically an extra attacker, isn't it? You know, you're pushing one more guy further forward, but then look at the Man City games, you know, in domestically and in the Champions League again, that he has the telling impact on those. So, honest answer, I don't think there is the right answer. Provided he's able to contribute,
But there's certain games, because you just mentioned Henderson there. Now I'm a big fan of Henderson, and I would be starting Henderson most games. But you're right. Like I can't remember the particular incident you're talking about. But there are passes that Oxlade-Chamberlain makes that Henderson just doesn't. Mm. Henderson does other things very, very well. And I'm just wondering whether in games, obviously, right now it is all about getting the match sharpness and the match fitness up. I was just wondering which type of game you think would suit him best. I don't know if there is a right answer.
I think Paul's right. I don't think there is a right answer, to be honest. I think, you know, good players play well against all different types of sides. That's what stands them apart, isn't it? I think, you know, there are different styles of play. One of the things that I find quite interesting is where, you know, for me early on in the game, Trent was, as you mentioned earlier actually as well, he was doubled up quite often. And sometimes when you're in the ground, you can imagine, let's say Virgil van Dijk's got the ball and you can see Trent over on the right-hand side in space. And quite often you'll think to yourself, play that ball over to him and there's a pass to Matip first. And you think, oh, why? And then I realised that what we were doing with playing the ball to Matip first is as soon as the ball's played to Matip, the fellow who's close to Trent runs towards Matip. Matip then plays the ball to Trent and he's got one less player to worry about.
Yeah.
So there's loads of these tiny little things that we think are insignificant that all play into freeing Trent up.
Yeah.
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, when he drives forward, takes two men with him and Trent's in space.
Yeah.
Because of that. And Henderson does it in a different way.
It's it's also a lot of the time is where's Trent's pass? We don't think about who Trent's passing the ball to. We're like, well, it's obvious you go to there. But then, and this happened so much in the first 15, 20 minutes of the game, we played the ball to Trent and all the passing lanes are shut off. We've got no one there because they've got so many men back. So sometimes you've kind of got to go, you've got to take three passes where one logically would do. But I think short term anyway, Ben, on the Ox stuff, these games is the answer because you're not throwing him in against, probably not throwing him against Chelsea, maybe, you know, or City or whatever, the really big games, Napoli, where you wouldn't be, I don't think he'd have been in contention to start that game regardless. once he's fully fit, you can play Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in any game of football because he's that good. Yeah. But for now, I think, you know, and that's what I say. I think
we haven't got a game like this for a while. It's a shame. But we don't play at home again in the league.
You might find Sheffield United away could be
MK Dons.
Yeah, I think MK Dons. Absolutely certain. Yeah. I think he plays in that regard. Let's move on. Joe Matip, Jack should just get a penalty.
Yeah, I don't understand
how the guy's got his arm around his neck.
I mean, if a headlock isn't clear and obvious, I do not know what is clear and obvious.
Yeah.
And it's this whole thing with VAR, and I think Mike Riley came out in midweek and said about it made four mistakes last month. The whole idea of VAR is to not make any mistakes whatsoever. It was to get rid of them in the Premier League, and we're still seeing it, and I know we're six games in, I know it's going to take time, but these constant mistakes from VAR, I see you've put on here, is it bad VAR or bad refereeing? I think it is a mixture of both.
It's bad implementation of the whole thing, because they cut it. So on the BT coverage, they go to their expert referee in his little hole, whatever he's living, and he's like, what is it? And he said, it's a subjective decision, so the VAR can't be used because it's basically open to interpretation whether it's a foul, whether you think it's a foul or not, which again is coming down to how the Premier League is implementing it, because in realistic terms, he should just be getting a little note saying, there's a penalty there, mate. Just give the penalty and we'll explain it to you as you're walking over. Blow the whistle, point at the spot, walk over and we'll tell you a bit more. You know, and as it was, they're being told not to interfere in that decision. And what's worse about the whole thing is then they push the guy in the studio and they say, would you give it? And he says, at the cop end, yeah. And you're like, fuck off.
Why has he said that?
Fuck off, you little gobshite. And when do we get penalties at the cop end? When? I mean, and Paul Tompkins has been on one about this all weekend long, but like, Spurs have had more penalties than us at Anfield in the last 2 years. It's like,
It's mad.
It's just not. It's utter nonsense, and it tells you everything you need to know about what's wrong. VAR is supposed to be this impartial thing that sorts it out. It's not. It's more examples, I think, of, again, poor implementation, in addition to a former referee explaining to you the mindset of referees, is that the reason he's not giving it at the cop end, because he's joking, they're laughing, oh, giving it at the cop end, oh, because that's a thing. It's not a thing. It's genuinely not a thing. It's mad. It's absolutely fucking mad.
At least they're consistently shit, though, still, because...
Yeah, but they were consistently shit anyway. Why are three more people being paid money to be consistently sit and watch the telly? Do you know what I mean?
The thing is, there's that thing as well where City Tottenham, it happens there.
Rodri Long, yeah.
And I wonder if they've just been told, don't give that in the next game it's on telly, because... There you go, we've got to keep the consistency now we've got VAR.
It just feels like
the protection. So what you're saying is, if they get it wrong the first time, they're just going to get it wrong for the rest of the season.
They say to him, oh, you got it wrong,
getting it wrong.
We changed the rule now. Don't give that for the next few weeks, because...
Really?
Shit. Well...
What referee is going, you know, it's a subjective decision about a headlock? It's not. It's a fucking headlock.
It's a headlock. It's not if it's a foul, is it? It's if it's a clear and obvious error. So for some reason they've decided that it's not a clear and obvious error that he's missed that. They might think it's a foul, but they might think at the same time. For me, I don't know.
But hang on a minute, right? So what you're telling me now is it's got to be a clear and obvious error. I've heard that said so many times. If the referee has just not seen it, let's say he's just facing the other way. Yeah.
And
he's not seeing it. Can VAR say to him, you've missed something there? You're clear and obvious error, was you? You're looking the wrong way, you knobhead.
the way I see VAR...
But I don't think they would... Sorry, Jack. I don't think they would, because we're starting to build a picture up here of refs protecting refs. I don't think they want to make... They're trying not to draw attention to the stupidity of the referees on the pitch somehow. It's fucking weird.
It's just a penalty.
The way I see VAR is, the best part of VAR is when... The guy in the ref's ear says, I think there's a decision to make there. The ref goes over, watches it again, and makes his decision based on the replay.
That for me is bollocks. Because then you're then talking five minutes while a guy goes and consults the video screen. You shouldn't need to be done. If you've got professionals and they've seen it, it should be like goal line technology. It should be like offsides. You know, you've got a guy there whose job it is to tell you whether it's offside or not. You've
Trust
got
them.
Exactly. Mate, it's a penalty. Blow the whistle, it's a penalty. You know, someone has been fouled in the box. But again, it comes down to, if they're being told they're not allowed to
override the referee.
Then what again? What's the point? My only thinking from the actual referee there is that because Matip makes the best of it and he effectively nods it down, he's almost gone.
Advantage?
Maybe. I don't think he's given advantage, has he? But maybe he's thought, maybe he's not seen the initial pull and all he sees turned and seen Matip nodding it down. And yeah, there's been a bit of a coming together because there's always coming together. It's not my job to make a case for defending referees because referees are shite. But that's the only way I can possibly fathom that he's gone that way, is he's thought, Matip's tried to nod that down deliberately when he's basically unmarked, 6 yards out, trying to, you know, goal scoring.
It's baffling.
Crazy. One thing that was good in this spell, Chris, I think we kind of touched on it already, but I love the fact that Liverpool got themselves into the game around this time. We always need to see this as a fan in particular, but I think the team for confidence just see us being dangerous. You know, she's a team set up, they look to nullify, and you start to get a sense of whether it's going to be one of those games or not by whether you can craft opportunities. And Liverpool just started to turn up the heat, starting to cause problems. We put a couple of good crosses into the box. They started to be a little bit panicky, and you start to get this sense that this is probably just a matter of time.
Yeah, I think Ben nailed it before, to be honest. I think the key turning point for us was Andy Robertson making a tackle near the halfway line. He slides in, the crowd wakes up, and then all of a sudden Origi's in the nine where you probably want, and we've whipped a few balls in earlier to Mane and Salah, and Lascelles has not dealt with it really easily. We whip another ball in, Lascelles just about clears it off Origi's head, comes to Mane, he whips a ball and Origi gets the head that it goes wide, and you're thinking, this is coming before half time now.
Yeah,
and it was that, and then it was a little bit disappointing then to see Origi. Obviously he picked up an injury earlier on in the game, fought through it, but it was the worst thing that could have happened for Newcastle bringing Bobby Firmino on, because,
yeah,
I mean, the lad's, I don't know, he's playing better than Suarez ever played for us.
Yeah, he's, Roberto Firmino is, you know what, I loved classic peak Ronaldinho. And you know, you watch the footballer just properly enjoying playing football, just big smiles, everything feels like it's within, like he's got his, a grip on everything that's happening in the world around him. And that's how Firmino's playing at the moment. He's just having fun. He's going out there and he's like, this is dead easy, this football stuff. Some of the passes he's playing, it's not just, you know, I mean, look, the assist for Salah's goal is absolutely something else. But the one he plays for Robertson, like he dinks it over the defender for a laugh. For nothing, for no other reason than shits and giggles.
I was laughing at you when we were playing the new Pro Evo the other day because you did something to it. I was like, that's not a through ball. Yeah, the next day, fucking Bobby's doing it on the pitch.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like he's in the fucking Matrix. He's seen it all in fucking bullet time at the moment. Yeah, there's like fucking five fellas around him for that assist. And he goes, I'm going to knock it onto this foot. Everyone's going to go that way. And while they're doing that, I'm going to knock it that way. And I'm not even going to look. While I'm doing it, I'll probably just look at someone and smile, and then all of a sudden the ball's gone through. There's a lad there who's injured off Bobby's assist. Mm-hmm. He's thrown himself head first on the floor because he doesn't know which way he's supposed to be going.
Yeah.
Never mind Salah going round him.
He tries the last swipe. Absolutely amazing. You love to see it. You love to see someone desperately trying to use any body part available to stop a man going through. It's that for me, no skill. Ben, it's the kind of thing you see skills YouTubers do, but it's got no practical application in a competitive game of football. Or if you do, you just get took out. But Firmino is, because he's dead right, he's working on another level now. I didn't think he could get better, but he is noticeably, tangibly a better footballer than any Bobby Firmino we've had up to
this
point.
Yeah, he's been absolutely fantastic. I mean, the way he comes on and just finds those little pockets of space, he's unique in the way the area of the football pitch that he occupies and makes use of so effectively, in the sense of there's loads of different types of strikers in the Premier League, but there just isn't anybody else who would quite do the same job, if not in the world. And I think even he's, you know, you were saying before about him enjoying his football, even I think there's been some quotes coming out about how, like, he just loves being at the club and how the fans appreciate him, and, you know, we singing his name and all that. And it just feels like for him at the moment, he's riding this wave of winning the Champions League, winning the Copa America, coming through to the season, not really having had much of a break. So he's been able to maintain that match sharpness and just carry on. The Arsenal game, he was absolutely superb. And, you know, the Burnley game, he creates a goal and scores a goal. And there's actually quite a similar goal, the second goal on Saturday, the way he wins the ball back and plays that ball through. Obviously, Dubravka has a bit of a nightmare, but you know, the way he drives forward, I don't think defenders know what to do with him when he's running towards them, because they're looking at him and he's running towards them, but they've got Mane there and they've got Salah there. Do they go two? Because that's going to create space behind them. Do they drop off? But he can hit them as well. So they've got absolutely no idea what to do with him, because they can't pick him up, because he's playing so deep, because he's not playing a traditional number nine role. Yeah. So they've got no way of tracking him.
He's just absolutely unreal, Jack. And it was something kind of Ben hinted at there, you know, that is how established he is and how much he loves it. See the video his wife put out of him and his daughters singing his song in the stands and stuff like that. You just look at a man and he's just, you know, it's like he's got his time and place, and this is Bobby Firmino's time and place. And what I really love is that the beauty of that little bit of skill that sets up the third goal is that it's been picked up by the world, and everyone's looking at it and everyone's talking about it, and everyone who's got the rights to put it out there has got their own clip out of it. You know, you've got Liverpool and BT and Optus and all these other random places sticking it out, and everyone's talking about it. And all of a sudden, you know, the general consensus, talking about like Virgil van Dijk and Alisson the other week, and they're winning awards because it's universally accepted that they're brilliant footballers. It feels like that was like a game where the world of football just went,
stood up and
said, yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the thing, because for years we've been talking about Firmino being the system player, and you see other fans laughing and saying, he's not as good, he's the worst player in your front three. He's not. He is an absolute phenomenal player, and everyone's seen it now. And it's bringing it back to the happiness thing. It's like, he's won the Champions League, he's won the Copa America. When he had his 3-week break, he was getting pissed every day with Philippe Coutinho. This is Bobby Firmino's world at the minute, and we're just all living in it.
Yeah.
We really are, because he is. Klopp a few years ago came out and said, Mane's got a song, Salah's got a song, Firmino needs one. And I think it's been perfect timing for him that he's getting all this success with club and country. He's got his song, and it's just absolutely phenomenal. I will never ever tire of watching Roberto Firmino, and you touched on it earlier saying that he's playing better than Luis Suarez at the minute, and with that skill he did, I looked at it and I thought, you know what, he is better than Luis Suarez, and I think he is one of the best strikers we have had, if not the best in my lifetime, and that's been above Suarez, above Firmino, above Torres. I really
he's got
do think
just
he's
an extra
there.
Level of intelligence.
Exactly. It's,
I think
it's like
that's what it
the
is.
Thing I pointed out to as well is the second goal. So when Oxlade-Chamberlain's in that touch and he's pressing, he's dropped deep, he's pressing with Matip, and he wins the ball back straight away, he creates the opportunity. And yes, we did get a slice of luck for that goal, but it's Firmino's ability, and a lot of other players would give up there and be like, Ox is giving it away. It'd take some seconds to get back into the game. But he just goes, you know what, he's got that instinct to get the ball back and press. And
how many teams, I love that, actually, Jack, how many teams the midfielder loses the ball and the centre-back and the striker go and win it back at the same time? And that's just Liverpool all over, isn't it? Your midfielder loses the ball, both of them come in, they walk away with it, and it's an assist in 5 seconds flat.
He, like, it's like something in his brain that just goes, here we go, this is my time. So the opponent gets the ball and he actually comes alive, which is obviously, again, you talk about the system player, that does all over, isn't it? But it's Bobby Firmino in a nutshell. Most people, you're right, would be like, and you see loads of forwards who do it, and fine, you know, Leo Messi doesn't come alive in that situation, you know, and that's the best footballer in the world. Of course, he's at different levels and all that kind of stuff, but Roberto Firmino just sees, if the opponent's got the ball, it's like, That's his trigger for creating a goal scoring opportunity.
The spider sense is going
honestly,
off and he's looking off.
That's the archetypal Roberto Firmino goal or assist is exactly that. It's him coming in from behind, nicking the ball away and striding up the pitch and making something happen. He's just absolutely unbelievable.
Klopp even said it. Klopp was talking to Peter McDowell after the game, and Klopp said, I nearly sang his song. Yeah. The performance was so good. You know what I mean? This is the manager of your football club saying, I was close to joining in with C. Senor.
I think Steve McManaman gave him man of the match. And he said, it's not often that I'll go against a fella who scored two goals in the game, but you've got to give it to Firmino. And again, it's a lad who came on after half an hour, played 60 minutes of footy and was the best player on the park. And it's funny because I was thinking this, watching the game, that Mo Salah might be our least talented footballer in the front three. And by that, I mean, like, I'm not saying he's not talented. I mean, like, in terms of how good he is as an all-round footballer, he's probably the least technically gifted of the three, which is insane. Yeah. He scored like 700 goals in the last two seasons.
I've been saying that for a while, that it's mad how good our front three is. You look at our front three and you're saying those front three are definitely three of the best 7-10 players in the world right now, and that is genuinely incredible. You look, they're all 30 million players when we got them, and Jurgen Klopp has just turned them into literally the best players in the world.
Yeah.
And it's like, as you say, Mo Salah, our least technically gifted player, and it's like, how mad is that?
I mean, I'm not sure it's like that.
I just think that they all, like we used to talk about Firmino, Liverpool fans spoke about him, he's the glue that sort of holds it all together. I think without Mo Salah, and you put someone else in there, it doesn't work. So they've all got this thing. They just meld together perfectly.
I think that's down to the. I think that's why you've got to give the manager immense credit, because I think when there's a lot of conversations about Raheem Sterling at the moment. Raheem Sterling's playing at a top level as well. But like, would you have Mane or Sterling? And I'm not sure that if you put Mane in the City team, he's quite as effective for them, even though he's talented. I'm not sure in that system under Pep Guardiola. I don't think. I mean, maybe Pep Guardiola will be able to get a tune out of him as well. He would be able to. But I don't think that the three players individually are all world class. But I think the way they put themselves together,
I think it's a temptation to compare because it's front three stuff. But you're right. We've got three lads who are all world class, who all play the game completely differently, and it works. You know, it's like you're putting three random ingredients together that you go, okay, and then you know they're amazing in the pot. And the point I'm kind of making about Salah is Salah's just a very direct footballer, isn't he? He runs in straight lines, dead fast, and he kicks the ball at the goal. Whereas like he's Mané, like we shouldn't.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
We should be dedicating more time to Mane's performance, because Mane was absolutely unreal. Absolutely unreal. Like, because the first goal, like, he puts it in the top bin. He smacks one in the top bin, inside the box. Great. Every time he picked the ball up, he's just... skinning men for fun. His close control, dribbling, direct running, ability to find the back of the net. Mane's gone up a level. He's been borderline world class, and I've said this. You know, if he puts together a full season of it, this feels like that. This feels like the season of Sadio Mane.
He's already done it for me. He did last season, full season of being world class. He's now just capitalising on that. And I don't know, like, we sit here every single week, it seems, and talk about how good they are. I could just say what I said last week about him. He's passing the ball into the net now. Mm. And that's not Sadio Mane who signed for us. Now you get the ball, Robbo plays him the ball, and he's like, I think I'll probably just pass it into that top bin there.
It looks effortless, doesn't it, when he puts that in? And that's like, you see footballers and
it's normally.
It's an obscenely difficult thing to do, to change your body shape and put the ball in the top bin. I mean, like, we're talking from your layman's term, from your basic average human beings, but like, it is a very, very difficult skill to do.
And his second goal, he's like, if I just leave this here now, the keeper's going to bounce it off his knee. And the vision to see that type of shit, like, you know what I mean? That's playing the world, lad.
Yeah, absolutely.
The first one, they just felt like a sense of inevitability to it. As soon as he gets that, just a couple of yards of space. I mean, I was doing the story of the match, and obviously you know how it is when you're recording and like you've got the phone ready. And sometimes there's like, I'm going to start recording here, but you know, you can't really feel a natural. But that one, as soon as he got the ball in that space, I was like, I'm ready to hold on to the phone because you just know that as soon as he's got the ball and as soon as there's that couple of yards of space in front of him, that he's on his right foot, it's in.
Second, he got the ball. There's just a feeling of inevitability, and it's funny because talk about it. The Bravka had an absolute shocker for his other goal, but I actually had that feeling of inevitability a few times during the game, Jack. And the Bravka actually ends up being almost Newcastle's best player because how Robbo's not come out with a goal, and how Trent's not come out with a goal in that game is down to their goalkeeper, which is mad.
Well, we were so good in the second half, as Chris said. It was some of the best football we've played in a long time, actually. And I think Dubravka stopped it from being 7 or 8. And it was one of them situations where it often happens against Liverpool where you have just a goalkeeper being absolutely immense, and you're like, are we going to get past him much today? But it was one of them where I think it could have been a completely different scenario where we're scoring goals for fun that game. And it's one of them where we come away 3-1, but we were incredible.
It was a great example, the Robbo one in particular, like, as Bobby plays the pass and he's just laughing his head off.
I think Robbo's laughing as he's running onto it.
Yeah. It's just, but I've no idea how that goes out. Like, I celebrate it because it's in. It's a goal. How do you not score after that move? He's very unlucky, or the goalkeeper's very lucky, or whatever.
It wasn't even the best move of the match.
No, I know.
And Bobby flicked it over some fella's head, and it wasn't even the best move of the match. Yeah,
it's obscene. But I love that, and it showed you how out Liverpool were in control of the game, and it never felt out of our reach the result, because they should be annoyed, or they were showing some signs of annoyance. They weren't. It was just like, that's fine, we've got this, we're going to continue to have this, we're going to continue to create these chances, because that's what we do. Goes into that feeling of inevitability that they're out there enjoying their football in a game where Newcastle effectively put 10 men behind the ball for large portions of
11 at times. Yeah. I don't know how we do it. And I think I said maybe towards the back end of last season that I realised that this Liverpool side play a 90-minute game now, and it just feels like you've got the team in a vice-like grip and you're just turning it all the way through the 90 minutes, and it comes to about 60 minutes and the teams that you're playing, they're just on their arse. Yeah. And it feels like Liverpool are just enjoying it. Like, there's another level that you can go to. If we need to go, we can just, you know, a little bit faster, a little bit crisper, and we just continue. And we honestly, I don't see where we don't win a game anymore.
I know. I completely. It's that thing of, and I put it here, it's important to win these convincingly because it lets the opponent think there's no plan that will stop them being, you know, stop a defeat happening. Because now I've seen three different teams come to Anfield in those games, all try something different, all try something that wasn't the way they play every week, wasn't their stock go-to way of playing football. Norwich being a slight exception to that, but like, you know, as far as a newly promoted team coming in and swinging for you, it was a bit of a shock factor to that. And not one of them has has yielded any results. They've had little bits that you might, maybe some manager might be able to weave something together from that, but you're going to come and defend all game long, good luck. You're going to come and have a pop at us, all right, sounds good luck. You're going to come and try, okay, just let our fullbacks have it, yeah, all the best, you fucking idiots. It's absolutely brilliant, and that's what we're starting to build up. Now everyone's talking about Liverpool's, it's like the longest unbeaten run at home, you know, in the Premier League or something, isn't it? And, you know, the people are talking about the record that Mane's got about it's the longest run a Premier League player's had unbeaten at home. It's unbeaten at home, isn't it? It's insane. And Man City, conversely, and we'll come on to talk about them in a little bit, just some little cracks starting to happen. I look at it, Chris, and I don't think we will. We'll probably lose our next three or whatever, because that's the way footy works. But I genuinely finished watching that game at the weekend and went, I wouldn't be shocked if Liverpool went unbeaten all season. Because look, things happen, twists and turns, yada, yada, yada. But that's how good we are right now.
I was speaking to a City and United fan yesterday in the pub, and I was saying to them, they're my mates and they know I'm quite a pessimist when it comes to Liverpool. So when we play Sheffield United, I'll be worried that actually we might slip up to them. But actually right now we're in a situation where I'm looking at it and I'm like, City clearly have their weaknesses at the minute and we're just incredible. Our front three are happy, playing the best football of their lives. The whole team, there's not a player without a smile on his face. Obviously we had that thing the other week with Mane, but that was nothing. And the fact that people talked about that just shows that people are trying to create a problem at Liverpool. People are trying to find issues within the club when actually there's none. We're the champions of Europe, we're winning football easy, and it's just brilliant at the minute. It's brilliant to be a Liverpool fan. Cause
our biggest worry at the moment is that the manager might leave in 3 years. Yeah. That's the biggest problem that we've got. Yeah. Isn't that nice? Yeah. Yeah. We don't look. I never worry. I mean, even 1-0 down, I it's very strange to be in a situation where I never worry that we don't win that game. Mm-hmm. And I never worry, actually. I don't see us never scoring less than two.
Yeah,
it always feels like we're going to get at least two in a game.
Well, that's the point.
Concede more than one. Yeah. So it always feels as if we're going to not run away with games.
But that was another stat, wasn't it? The longest unbeaten, the longest winning run where we've also scored two goals, right, at least two goals in a game as well.
Yeah, so it's all 14 of the wins, isn't it?
A tiny worry of mine is that it fades towards the end of the season because when people are knackered and, you know, in the last
Christmas
couple of years, in the last couple of years, we've had obviously a brilliant end to the season. But I worry that with the front three playing so much football over the summer, that actually the latter stage of the season it might fade.
Remember when Chelsea won the league the other year, and they were 15 points ahead, and everyone just fucking gave up.
Exactly, that was my fear until this weekend, and we'll see, because now when the Champions League football comes back, it's a fresh test, which we'll talk on the build up show for Napoli, of course. But I agree. But just the points that City are dropping, this is why we've gone all in to keep the side together, because it's starting to look like our game plan is go hard for the first half of the season, try and win, you know, get as many points on the board as possible, and go ape what Chelsea have done in the past, because the legs will fall off. The legs will fall off City as well at the back end of the season. But you've just got to hope, because what they're going through that we're not is they're bedding new players in, and they're also having to deal with injuries as well, obviously with the Laporte thing as well, and it just makes them slightly more vulnerable than us. We're a team in our absolute peak. We've not got to worry about fitness. I just think we will worry about fitness in April. I think that's what they'll do. And the plan is you just run as hard as you can for as long as you can. And if we fall short, then fine, we fall short. But at the minute, you know, apparently, and I heard this, and I haven't verified this, but apparently it's the biggest lead a team's ever had at the top of the league after five games, which means fuck all. I mean, it's genuinely fuck all. Let's come back in 10 games and see where.
When we were growing up, the league table had been out 1 week at this point, hadn't it? Yeah. Didn't bother until after the fourth game.
Yeah. So, like, you know, nothing. You know, we're not getting the bus sprayed. You know, the open top bus sort of sprayed just yet, or whatever.
It's only sprayed from last year anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. But very, 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 very encouraging signs, and it's a game plan that seems to be working so far. Anyway. The reason why we have this biggest lead at the top of the league and all these things going well for us is because, don't know if anyone got onto it at the weekend, but Norwich beat Manchester City.
What?
Fucking hell. What a belter weekend of football. So we won. City lost. Dev lost.
United won.
I mean, who gives a fuck? Yeah. But like, you know, like, just it was genuinely glorious. I walked out Saturday night with a spring in my step. Before we dive into talking about it, though, Chris, it's something you drew to my attention. You had a little, like, go predicting how the weekend's fixtures were going to go on the build-up show.
Not great. 3 o'clock Saturday is Man United Leicester at Manchester United. Leicester.
Yeah. That's going to be an actual interesting game. That.
Leicester, no, it is. I think Leicester are better than them.
Yeah.
Genuinely. Yeah. Have we got four yays for Leicester?
I want Leicester to win, and I also think he will. City. I think they're just going to win.
City. I mean, Sterling now looks on a different planet. Than
De Bruyne is. I mean, I think
he's already an early nomination for Player of the Year. If you're putting money on a player, I think it's between De Bruyne and Sterling.
I mean, Watford have been dreadful recently, so this is what they do. Arsenal will win that one.
Yeah.
And then Everton Bournemouth.
That's a 0-0.
Everton Bournemouth is just a draw, isn't it? I think they draw every time they play each of those two.
Spurs Palace at 3 o'clock.
Well, if Newcastle can go there and win, Palace can.
Yeah, not great. In defence of everyone, that Norwich... Look, we were saying off air, look, Norwich were always going to have a go. They weren't going to change their game plan. They were at home, they were going to cause City problems, but no one was predicting. I mean, like... That could easily have, you know, that could have just finished 3-1 and no one would have battered an eyelid ultimately. I mean, it could have finished 3-1 or 4-3 given how much pressure City put on, but brilliant, just absolutely it was, thrilling.
You know, my favourite part of that game, they had it on in the Curry House where I was Saturday night, and it's Cantwell running into the corner after about 92 minutes and he has an opportunity.
He could burst into the box.
And he's a young kid and, like, I know, I've seen experienced players who make the wrong... choice there, and he just runs into the corner, and I could almost feel Kyle Walker seething through the screen. I'm like, how fucking dare you? Yeah. We're Manchester City and Cantwell was like, pure, whiff this lad.
Yeah. It was pure.
Fart in his face as he runs away.
Couch co-op, playing against your mate. You run times running down, and you just he just made a beeline for the corner, like insane. It's like, and even experienced footballers, your natural instinct there, you're in. You can go and get a goal. You can go and get a shot on goal. And he's like, nah, not for me, thanks. I'm just going to go take this into the court. And then he, like, is it Walker that he rips as well? Does a little drag back and then they come away. Have anyone seen the video clip as well that someone's filming from the corner?
Yeah, it's right
and, like,
there,
they just
it? Yeah,
go, going oh my God.
The unity in the team, and you know, between the team and the fans. But obviously, Pukki sets up Cantwell for the second goal. And obviously the running into the corner at the end, it's just a team spirit that seems almost unrivaled, maybe rivaled by us, but like unrivaled at the moment in the sense of there's no individuals in that side.
There's no
at
egos
all.
In that attack.
Because all the fucking first teams run out. You can't have egos. The backups can
he made his debut for the under-23s this week apparently, and then he played on Saturday night and scored and ran into the corner. Yeah. So fair play to him.
No, I love that. It's dead right though, Jack. It's like that's what you've got to do against Manchester City. And it's funny because you had our mate Rory Jennings having a go when Norwich played us and saying, "Oh, did he call them morons or something?" Yeah, for saying you go to Anfield and have a go, lad. You good teams like that, you might as well. Like, if you've not got the system, if you've not got the work ethic and all that, then you should have. You need to build it up. There's something so likeable about Norwich, and it is that endeavour, it is that determination that you can take. And we talked about this on the show last week about that's where some teams have stolen a march. That's why Norwich have done well. They've got a unity. These teams are coming up from the Championship as a unified squad with a unified vision. And you come up against teams that, yeah, they've got the great individual stars, but if they take their eyes off the ball, they're causing problems. Brilliant.
Yeah. It was superb from Norwich all throughout the game, I think. And I think with Manchester City, it was one of them things where I don't think it was talked about enough before the game. Obviously, they lost company in the summer, which people seem to underestimate because, he was getting old, he was injured a lot, but you have that leader at the back, he's the captain, there's everything.
He comes into that game.
Exactly.
You know, Laporte out,
And they don't have a problem.
He covers for a
and
bit.
They're comfortable probably if he's in there. He comes in comfortable, leader at the back, sorts the defence out on this shit. And, you know, it was just, as you say, it was a brilliant weekend. I watched that game with a City fan and then I went to town after.
Where did he go?
Oh, he went to bed. Did not want to see my face after that game. So there you go.
No, and this comes back to it, doesn't it, Ben? It's the point I was making earlier about City. They'll pick themselves up, they'll dust themselves down, and they'll go and probably win every game between now and the end of the season because they are amazing. But this is where they're at in terms of the lifespan of their squad. Mm. This is a little bit of a transition period. The older guard are starting to fade or move on, and then you've got new players and younger players that are still being bedded in. And you know, it comes down to it. Gabriel Jesus still hasn't been fully trusted to be bedded in, so he has the ability to come in and win those games for them. He did that last season a couple of times, but they haven't found out a way to truly get him and Aguero in the same side at the same time. They've then got Rodri, you know, good player, scores a really good goal as well. But it's just these are the marginal differences in that side. It means that they are just not quite the same powerhouse that they were.
Yeah, and you know, it's difficult to keep. I think it's underestimated, almost underestimated to a sense of how difficult it is to keep that momentum going for a third season. We've almost become accustomed to these freakish numbers that they've been putting in over the last 2 years. 97 points and 100 points isn't normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, we might see this season what would be... We might see from them this season what would be enough to win the league most seasons in the noughties. They might go and get 86, 87 points. But for us, we might go on and we might have that second season of momentum where we go out and put a ridiculously outlying season again. And it looks like we have definitely got the potential to do that. But what we're going to see from them, we're potentially going to see a very, very good season from them. But because we're so used to these two seasons where they have been on such a ridiculous level, it's going to be a strange one.
The problem I think they've got right now is they've created a monster in us. To try and get to the point where you're getting 100 points or 97 points and not winning the league and they're getting to 98, we've improved. Mm-hmm. And so 5 games in, 3 wins, a draw and a loss isn't a bad start to 25 of the last 27 league seasons. It's genuinely not. But in us trying to compete with them, they've now regressed over this very early part of the season to the norm. And we're still here going, we're going for 100 odd points here. Yeah. We've got to get 100 points to beat Manchester City. So there's no let up on our end.
Yeah.
You think about their centre-back partnership, right? John Stones and Otamendi, they've won multiple league titles, these lads, and we're talking about them like they're a fucking laughingstock. Yeah. They're not a laughingstock. Yeah. It's just that when you're comparing them to a centre-back partnership or a back four with Trent and Robbo and Virgil van Dijk and, you know, world-class players like that, they are good enough to win the league title, but are they good enough to get 100 points as a centre-back partnership? Probably not. No. And that's the difference for me. Company played the last sort of that entire winning run.
Yeah.
He played all of that and he wasn't in the team at the start of the season, but when the shit hit the fan, Company went in there
and he won it for them, really. When they needed it at Leicester.
Yeah, the Leicester.
There he is.
Goal, you posed a question on the Around the League the other week, Ben, when the Laporte injury came out, of like how much it'll impact. And me and Chris kind of downplayed it a lot, but the point is...
I think everybody did.
Absolutely. And mainly part of this is like anti-jinxing, isn't it? Like, but, you know, there's also a degree to which, and it's the point Chris is making, nothing wrong with Otamendi and Stones. And they're a very, very good, two very, very good centre-halves and will be a very good centre-back pairing. But we know, it's like if we had to play 6 months of Lovren at the back, he has that in him. He has that little moment of a mistake in him. Yeah. And there's a fallibility in there that, you know, opponents will go up against and not feel as though they can't get something out of a
They've had a sniff like now. The rest of the league's had a sniff, and I think that's the key thing for us. Look at Watford yesterday going out and giving it all against Arsenal.
Yeah.
If teams... I think Ian Doyle tweeted it. It's mad when you have a go at Man City. They can be vulnerable, and now they have lost Laporte, who is their, you know, their equivalent to Van Dijk or however you want
to. Van Dijk's our Kraken, and Laporte's their Kraken.
He's absolutely brilliant, but you know, you can see there, teams will be looking at that third goal that Otamendi gives away, and they go, well, he could not comprehend the concept of being pressed that high and that intensely, and they'll be going, oh, right, okay. And, you know, I don't know who they're playing next, but the next team will be looking at them and the next few teams will be looking at them going, All we need to do. What we need to do is put them under a bit of pressure, and there is a mistake in them, unlike Laporte.
These things are all easier said than done, aren't they, of course, because there's so much that goes into these kind of things. There won't be many teams still who are brave enough to try that, but there are more teams at the moment who are a bit more, have a bit more of that in them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, your Southamptons are the way we'll might fancy the chances of having a little go in those regards, because, again, why not? What's the point in not? Because you're probably gonna get beat either way, and as we're seeing with teams coming against us, come and have a go at it. Norwich is still the team that caused us the most problems at Anfield this season. They give us more problems than Newcastle. They give us more problems than Arsenal, because they went at us. They tried to get in behind. They got in our faces, and we smacked them back for it. But so much to recommend from them from Fark's boys are just going, oh, that's how we play. We're gonna keep. Going to keep doing
the thing. I think they pulled this up on Match of the Day, and I thought it was the best analysis of the game that I've seen anyway, is that it's not just the ability to go and press Otamendi and that, it's the ability to play around their press. Yeah. And that's the hard thing when you're coming up against Manchester City. And that's, I think every team probably in the league does rondos at some point in training, but doing it live in a game when Manchester City players are flying at you that fast, that's the thing where most teams go, let's just fucking hoof this long and get rid for a bit, relieve the pressure. And Norwich never, they just continue to play out through their press, and then they got their opportunities that way. That's the thing that holds teams back, is that they can't play through the press.
It's funny, isn't it? And all of a sudden the talk is like Pep needed one more centre-half in the summer, and you know, like he basically rested De Bruyne, didn't he? You know, for this, because they've got one eye on Shakhtar in midweek, presumably. And that's what can happen. I think teams should take encouragement. And what was great as well, Pep Guardiola congratulated Liverpool on the title, didn't he? You know, he's obviously being irate, he's being funny, he's being sarcastic, but I love that his immediate reaction to it is that, I mean, and look, he's right to be sarcastic. It's five games of football in. Liverpool are going to drop points. There'll probably come a point where Man City are top of the league and Liverpool are in second because of a little bit of a switch around in things.
And television fixtures.
Yeah, all that stuff. But
Sky back half of the season. Yeah. Let's give Man City three games before Liverpool have to play.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Jack, I love that. I just love that it almost like his first thought is that we're there constantly, aren't
we? Yeah, he called himself Fraudiola as well, so it's just one of them things. I just think with Pep Guardiola,
he's holding on to that for 2 years. That's not been mentioned on football Twitter for 2 years. That has been fucking there at the back of his mind.
Oh, it was all over the place at the weekend, wasn't it? Game in like 25 or something like that. More than that, I don't think lost the game since like February or January.
The Newcastle game, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
It's one of them where I think every little thing pisses Pep Guardiola off. I think he's one of them managers who's so used to winning, he's so used to being perfect that everything sticks in his head, everything pisses him off. And I think it's one of them things where, I mean, I said at the start of the season, it's a bit of a bold shout, but I said that I think Pep Guardiola won't be at Man City at the end of the season, because I just feel like it's one of them things where if you have a problem here and there with Pep Guardiola, then everything falls apart. And I think the Premier League is one of them leagues where you are so easily able to self-destruct. We've seen it with Jose Mourinho several times. And I just have a feeling that it could happen with Pep Guardiola.
The thing with Liverpool now with this is that, as we say, we just got to keep going hard. And you hope that you just sprint. You're sprinting for the finish line early. And now that's not a sensible way to run a marathon, which is what the league is. But you've just got to get such a lead. And if you've ever done that, if you've ever chased after someone and you just reach a point where you're just like, oh, fuck this. And you just taste
after someone.
You know, like you'd be playing like Manhunt, or you're playing like in the kid in the school, and usually you just go, I'll be arsed, I'll just change my attentions elsewhere. Yeah. And
are you the Champions League? Yeah, that's what you'd hope.
Exactly. And I think that's what Liverpool's game plan is this season. Is you just comes a point where maybe they just take their eyes off that and just think, okay, that becomes ever so slightly a secondary concern to just keeping other things running. And I think that's, personally, you know, I don't think Liverpool win the league this season, but I do think that that's our best chances that right now in how it looks, certainly. Listen, if you want more great content this week talking about all of this kind of stuff, the Around the League show is coming up on the RedmenTV.com. I'm sure there'll be plenty of laughs and
plenty to discuss. Yeah. Great. That's on from Toffee TV, so I didn't plan on Everton being so bad yesterday, but it's perfect timing.
You could have lost any Monday, yeah. And you'd have probably been all right.
I love it. Yeah, catastrophic to heroic to catastrophic in the space of 90 minutes.
They won the transfer window though, so
they always do. So there's that coming up on the redmentv.com and the Man of the Match podcast. If you're not ready to finish talking about the Liverpool Newcastle game, there'll be a little bit more there for you. Again, it's free for the first month, so go and check it out. And then it's just £5 a month thereafter. Some amazing shows on there, plenty of exclusives, so go and get involved. Gentlemen, thank you very much. That's been an absolute pleasure. See you all very soon. Ta-ra.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.